Hi, I'm Reverend Carol Saunders, host of the Spiritual Forum. I'm here with a lot of interesting people who are consciously walking the spiritual path, experiencing and expressing the divine in unique ways and through unique lenses. Everyone here has wisdom to share and an interesting story to tell, all to inspire you on your spiritual path. Welcome to the Forum. Welcome, everyone, to the Spiritual Forum. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so excited about today's guest. I'll just have a really, really short run-up. I just want to thank Susanna for donating to the Spiritual Forum podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry. And speaking of the retreat, I do host a whole planet spirituality retreat every year in October at Unity Village in Missouri. And if you're interested in learning more about that, it's on the website now, thespiritualforum.org/retreat. It is for anybody who is planet-centered, animal-centered, spiritual-centered, all those three together as we co-create a world together that works for all beings on the planet. So please check out thespiritualforum.org/retreat. And if you have any inclination to subscribing either to the audio podcast or on YouTube, don't let anything stop you. Just push that button. I'd really appreciate having you as a subscriber. All right, let me introduce my guest today. Dr. Nayana Shah is a theoretical quantum physicist dedicated to living a conscious, compassionate, and creative life, illuminated by the constant inquiry of truth. Her research seeks to understand how different phases and properties of matter emerge in a collection of many particles interacting with each other under different conditions, and to identify the universalities within the diversity. She has a holistic, plant-based, and ahimsic lifestyle rooted in her Jain upbringing, and is a long-term Vipassana meditator, as well as a yoga and nonviolent communication practitioner and teacher. She serves on the board of the Cincinnati Permaculture Institute and the Parliament of the World's Religions. Welcome, Nayana.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to this interview. It's amazing to be with you, and just let's see where you take me.
Let's see where we go. And you are sitting in your beautiful home in Cincinnati. I just love the way your home looks and all the light. It just looks like it kind of embodies or reflects who you are. And so it's just really wonderful that you come today in such a beautiful space. So let's talk a little bit about, let me first back up and just full disclosure to everyone. I met you at the Parliament of World Religions, and this is back in August, and was just really enamored with this wonderful soul that has so much energy and so much light, and that you also have the science background and that you're so deeply spiritual. And so I couldn't help but think you would just be a wonderful, wonderful guest on this podcast, because that's kind of what we're all about, is finding the divine in whatever ways is inspiring to us. And I think that's what we're all trying to do here, those who listen to this podcast. So I'd love to talk a little bit about your Jain upbringing and what that was like and how that has influenced your life. I haven't had anybody on the podcast yet that has a Jain background. So let us know about that.
Yeah. I mean, I just close my eyes and see what image comes to me as my childhood gives me. And like the first thing that comes to my mind is my two grandmothers. And they both used to practice meditation. Like there's a Jain way of doing meditation. And there are like certain days when you do more. But then like there is a daily practice. And they used to always be sitting, like whatever is going on in the house, they had this mat and they would unfold this and they had like their particular thing and they would go and sit in this room and meditate. So I grew up seeing both my grandmothers. So when like the grandmother with whom I was growing up, she used to live in our house. We had a joint family. And the other grandmother, whenever I visited her in all my summer holidays. And so that's the image of like, imagine two grandmothers who meditate. I mean, it's just such a powerful thing. And no matter what's going on, they will not do that. It was such a dedicated practice. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind as growing up. And then most of my relatives, they were all like going to temple pretty regularly and fasting a lot. And the other thing is growing up, there are certain days based on the moon calendar when you don't eat certain things. So there was all that was part of my upbringing. So, oh, today is this day. So today we are not going to be eating any vegetables and it will be just grains. And that was, and then we used to look forward to certain dishes that we cooked only on those days. So the food part is also a very important part in the Jain upbringing, because we were following all these things of certain days when we don't eat like green vegetables, and certain, there are periods in the year around the time which is called Paryushan, when we don't, like for a month or more, like it depends on how much you are into it. But there are like people who practiced it for many months or so. You would not eat any root vegetables or potatoes or like any of those things at all. And then during Paryushan, it even more strictly. And so like eating was kind of, there was always this rhythm. There are days when you eat this, you don't eat this. And there was so much awareness about what goes into your body as a result. Because there were so many practices around what you are consuming, what you're eating, I think that was really part of growing up. It was not like that you just eat whatever. There was some conscious thought about when you're eating what. And then there was this thing, it is called, that my grandmothers used to practice, which is not to eat after sunset. And so actually many of my relatives still do this. So there is also what time of the day you're eating. And then there are lots of fasts when you don't eat at all the whole day and you don't drink water after sunset. And so it's just, I think it's like a lot of awareness about what you're eating. And of course, all Jains as we were growing up were vegetarian, because all this is going on because there's so much thought about how is your action of eating for your nourishment affecting other life. And there's constantly that thought there, right? Because the whole idea is that the roots, you are uprooting a plant. And so there are some who don't eat roots at all, root vegetables. Mm-hmm. There are like different levels of strictness that different people follow. I have lots of relatives who don't eat that at all. So there are many restaurants even in India which serve Jain food, which don't include any of these things that people don't eat. And yeah. So there's a lot about food, meditation, forgiving. I can say more, but for now, this is a good starting point.
Yeah, let's pause for just a minute, because I think this is so interesting. I think the Western culture is very numb and or just ignorant or just not thinking at all about food and the body. I've actually just fairly recently learned a lot more about it than I did my entire upbringing. Just what kinds of food are doing what in your body? And the idea that there is a religion or a spirituality or a culture that's very connected to this kind of food I'm putting in my body for this reason at this time, and then at another time I do something different. It's just very, very, very aware of the body, which I think also puts the soul and the spirit in the body. Like you're an embodied person versus we in the West tend to either overemphasize our body in terms of beauty and that kind of thing, or we're very disconnected from it. We abuse it horribly. So I just think it's really, really an interesting practice. I'd really love to learn. You may or not know this, but there's a rhythm to what you all ate and what days and all of that.
Yeah.
Did you know the reason behind it? Why sometimes this vegetable was okay and sometimes it wasn't? Did you know the biological reason behind it?
Yeah, I mean, yes. So usually, like to some extent, I'm sure there's like a much more detailed theory than what I know. But I think like there's a lot about what season is going on. So during rainy season, when there is much more life around, the chances of you hurting other life is much higher. So during that season, you're much more conscious about what you're taking because everything is flourishing and like even the microorganisms. And,
okay.
And so like, I think there is something about the season and yeah, I mean, and a lot of it actually is also linked to your own health. So I think like the Jain practitioners, whoever came up with all these ideas, they realized how we are so connected. So when you don't harm other beings, you're not also harming yourself. And like, it's not like separate. And so I think it kind of connects really well, that it also works well for your body. So it's not just that, oh, you are like mistreating yourself because you care so much about all other beings. I think the idea is that when you are doing that, when you are caring about all of life, in fact, you are also caring for yourself. And there's no separation, really. And that's kind of the beauty of it. I think that if you think of all the things that are done in Jain religion, like biological or health reasons, they all work well too. So there's a lot of fasting. And we know now like how fasting is so powerful. And so I think, so to some extent, there is also that. And like, it's just like, if you cannot do it all the time, then there are certain days when you can do this. At least your body gets a break and the plants get a break from being consumed. And like, I think it's kind of, there's this rhythm. And so there are lots of deep reasons probably that you can keep thinking about, but I think it's kind of more or less being in tune with your body and the life around you is the idea, I think.
Yeah, I completely get that. I get the layers now. And just the idea that you're so aware of the life that you are putting into your body and what that is. I'm a Unity minister, and Unity was founded back in the late 1890s, but the founders, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, they practiced ethical vegetarianism at the time. And the early Unity teachings were really focused on ethical vegetarianism, not as a you must, but part of it was, it was about spiritual development. It was about ethics. It was about being universal love. It was about, you know, how do we create a world of peace if we're harming other beings? But yeah. There was all this metaphysical part, which is what you're putting in your body, it's going in your body. I mean, you really think about it. So if you're putting anything that was harmful, that caused, you know, torture, or that was exploitation, these kinds of things that we do to animals, that energy is going into your body. And so then where does it go? What is it? Now it's in here. And so it was really, the teaching was really largely part of the cleansing the soul as well as the body.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Because there's all this connection. I mean, fasting is also so much for your mind as for your body. And all this awareness and what you're putting is affecting your spiritual life too, right? What you're eating and like we're harming, as you said. So ahimsa is the foundation of everything that is done in Jain religion. Everything revolves around it. So I feel like it's such a modern religion in that sense. It's kind of, it's 2,500 years ago. It's one of the oldest one. But it's, if you think about it, it's so scientifically sound. And it is like for the current time, if you like start thinking, let me think what would be a good way to go, almost all answers kind of that you think scientifically are going to be working, they're almost there. Like, you know, what kind of food is good? Like the whole eco-consciousness is inbuilt in this. So it seems like in many ways, it's a very modern, like, you know, very contemporary religion. It has immediate relevance for us now.
Yeah, it's timeless. It's been around a long time, and it's also very, very relevant today. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your meditation practice. I know that informs your life as well as your Jain upbringing. So what is your meditation practice?
Yeah, so I want to tell you how I started, got to it, because it's not like, oh, like one fine day I started meditating. So it's, I mean, I was growing up with, as I said, with this grandmother's meditating, and I didn't really know what is it that they do exactly when they sit and close their eyes. And there was like all this chanting of Om and all that, like yoga was kind of always there. So that's like, you know, not even Jain practice of chanting Om and all that. But like there was always all these different elements were there. And then I remember as a child, my uncle went for this Vipassana meditation course. And at that point, I remember for some reason we were visiting him just for that, or like all our family members, we were visiting this place called Sangli, which is like a much smaller town than where I grew up. And we are like, all kids were running around. And I remember like this, my uncle, who is, by the way, an amazing person. Anyway, he was like telling my mom and my aunts and everyone about this thing. And I'm like just running around, but few words fell on my ears. And like whatever few words fell, like they stayed with me. I guess like it's like, you know, there are seeds and when there's time, they sprout. So they just stayed with me. I was not even sitting and listening. I was just going around and I, some words about, oh, like there was this sensation. Something stayed with me, okay? Like the idea, the energy of what he was saying. I don't remember the exact word. And then like I was in college and some classmate mentioned that he had gone to Igatpuri, which is this main center in India where this Vipassana meditation, which is taught by Goyankaji in his style, is taught there. And I said, fine. Like, it just kind of landed on me. But at that point, again, it was like I was not ready for it, I guess. So I came to this country. And then I started my PhD. And then, I don't know, there was a trip I was going to make to India. And it just like, just came up. Like, there was no context. When I go back, I'm going to go for a Vipassana course. And I had not heard from anyone anything in the recent times. And then I just went back to India and near Pune, where I grew up, there's a center which had just opened. It was kind of recent. There were like the windows didn't even have glass. I remember like having a big blanket all around me, walking around with a big blanket in the center. And yeah, so I did this 10-day course, and it's a pretty intense course. Like it's total silence, and you don't speak at all, even like with actions or like just anything. And I remember this person who introduced the first time, he said, just look down and go, because as soon as you look at someone, like your thoughts are going out, and the whole point here is that you're trying to go inside. And just that idea was so amazing for me. Like, you know, for 10 days I'm not going to like look around and worry about what's going on around me. I'm just going to explore what's going on inside me. And that was in 98, which was a while ago, 1998, that I did my first course. So it's like, you know, 25 years now. Yeah. And so then I just knew right away, like it was my answer to so many of the questions I had in my mind, right? I mean, there were so many times when I realized, like when I did something afterwards, that, that was not a good idea. But like, I didn't really have a practice as to what I do at the moment. And so this practice is basically as a scientist. So I had already started my PhD program in physics. So for me, it was just totally scientific. Because first of all, it was universal, and I'm very drawn to universal ideas. It's kind of my guide in some sense, like looking for what is universal, because I feel like that's kind of gives you a direction when you're searching for something that is universal or finding or discovering. And it might not even be like your consciousness saying, but it's just like, that's like kind of a compass almost, right? And so the idea that it is a universal thing, and it was taught by Buddha, but it's not like a organized religion. It's just this meditation technique that has been offered. And The first 3 days, all you do is focus on your breath. And that's kind of used, like it's called Anapana, where you are seeing, like just being aware of the breath going in and going out. And that's used as a way of like focusing your mind. And like, you know, before that, I had never sat for 3 days doing nothing but focusing on my breath, or rather trying to focus on my breath. And so I think the idea was like, I had that kind of focus of mind was never done. So it was clear something is going to come out that I have not experienced before. Or for anyone who goes for the first time, if they've never done this before, you have never found out for yourself what is it that you're going to find out when your mind is so much more focused than you've ever done before. Because we have not explored. There are like so many things, elements in our mind that we don't know, like what's the depth of our consciousness. And so that was, and like at the end of the third day, like 3 days of practice, then afterwards you get, they say like you're getting Vipassana, which is like basically your mind is so focused now that you can actually be aware of like the fine, subtle sensations all over your body, which you didn't even, I didn't even know existed. So it's like one of those big discoveries you make. Like as a scientist, imagine like, you know, it's like, oh, wow. I cannot tell you. I was so amazed at this whole experience. It's like my discovery, right? Like for everyone, and everyone can do this. This universal thing. It's not like, you know, I can do it and you cannot. And there's no, it's just the breath and the sensations which all of us have. And it's about just being aware of it and then understanding what's the nature of it. So it's like totally like the what like scientists are doing, right? You find something and then you're trying to understand how it behaves, what are its properties and what laws it follows. And so this is like you're trying to find out for yourself, for all of it inside, what's the interaction between your body and mind, your breath. And you are your own lab, and like you are making your own discoveries. And it's just the depths to which you go in your discovery varies for different people. And yeah, so for me, it was like a very powerful experience to discover who am I, what's my body, like my mind, and what is it capable of, and what kinds of habits it has formed, and what layers of conditioning I have. And so, yeah, at the end of it, like, you know, I just was thinking towards the end of all the people I wanted to tell, like, oh, they should come and do this. And like, you know, yeah, it's very powerful. And so then, since then, I have been practicing this. It's the foundation of all my practices. And it's like right now, as I'm talking with you, I'm doing it. It's just like most of the time of my life, I try to be aware of my sensations, and that's like an anchor for your consciousness almost.
Okay, there's a lot that you just shared, and a couple of things I want to pull out. First of all, I think it's really, first of all, growing up with grandmothers meditating blows my mind. I think that is so cool. And it, you know, I'm a new grandmother. I've got to think about who do I want to be for my grandchild? And wouldn't it be cool if she watched me meditating? Like that's what's her memory is. And I think that's so interesting that your grandmothers gave you that gift, that this is kind of a part of life. That this is not like a separate thing that they do. This is something that is a part of their life that they do every day, no matter what. What a fabulous example it is for you as a child growing up and seeing that.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of how we can be examples in our spiritual lives for all sorts of people just by, you know, openly practicing what we know. So that's the first thing. The second thing, I think when you talked about, was it your uncle who had these words that planted seeds?
Right.
Yeah, the thing I want to point out about that is I think that's also fascinating, because I think a lot of us think that when we speak and share something, that if the person doesn't get it or something at the time, that those words went nowhere. And I think there's a lot of frustration sometimes when we want to share something that we've experienced or something that we know or something that we know would be so helpful. And it's not really imposing so much, but it's like wanting to share joy, and it may or may not land. But you don't know if it's landing or not. I think it's really important to know that words can land. They can be seeds, and they're just growing in the consciousness of somebody. And then there may be somebody else that comes along that says something else, and then those seeds just start to sprout. So, you know, your uncle who said those words wasn't there to see you sprout into this amazing meditator, but he started it. He planted those seeds. And it's so important for us to know that too, that whatever we're sharing, if it's coming from truth, coming from soul, coming from spirit, that we can just trust that it's going to go out and the soil of consciousness will take care of it and feed it, and that person will awaken to the idea in the right and perfect time for them. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And I'm just thinking, I was not even like his primary audience. Like, I was just running around. His audience was someone else. And you don't even know who will hear your words and how they will reach someone. And amazingly, the people who were his audience, none of them did any meditation course. There was my mom, though. And none of, like, you know, my other relatives who were there in that room, none of them ever did, I think, Vipassana meditation. My mom was there. She did not do it right away. She did it after I started practicing and after I had done a few courses and I was talking about it. So she had heard it from him, but then it reached me and then it went back to her. So it's just amazing who will pick it up, like what seeds will land on. I think it's just, you know, we are all on a path and each one has like the path of truth that one wants to walk on. And it's not like we sit and make a plan like, hey, this is my path. I think it's just like, as long as we keep going and remembering we are on a path and just being aware and kind of being aware of the fact that you're connected and receiving, be very open. Like, I received something from my uncle and I didn't even... It just stayed with me. At that point, I didn't even know what was its significance. But like, you know, so you never know. It doesn't like, you don't have to have a big plan, like every single thing you hear that, oh, it has to be only if it's useful. Like, you know, this transactional thing doesn't work. It's like one has to receive. Just be open to receiving everything the universe is giving us. And the universe is acting through so many different people and animals and plants and trees. And I remember like there are times when like I just go and touch a tree. Like I just feel like, oh, I want to touch that tree. Now, you know, you would think, okay, what purpose does this serve? You don't know. You know, just like, you know, I feel like one has to be open to connections with everyone, everything, every idea, and like just keep receiving. And that takes us on a path of truth. I think like it's not like you make a big plan. It's just receiving, walking on. Then like I feel like the intuition is so important. And I feel like my life has been guided all the time through intuition. Mm-hmm. Not like I decided, mm-hmm. plan, oh, this is a good thing. Like how I chose physics even. You know, everyone, all my friends went to become doctors in my class, all my close circle of friends. And my mom would have loved if I became a doctor, but she is always been so supportive of what I want to do. And some point I just like liked physics and I said, oh, let me start attending some classes. Till, you know, we find out about the medicine thing. And I started going. And then, like, in one class, I was just sitting and listening. And I just wrote on this piece of paper, I'm going to do physics in my life. It's nothing, you know, so I feel like I went there. I was open to receiving. Something was happening around me and something came to me. I feel like all of my decisions in my life have been like that. I just feel like intuition has guided me where I need to go for my path of truth.
Mm-hmm. I completely get that. I I think you made a really good choice picking physics. physics is like math. It's like universal truth. It's so interesting. But I want to get back to the receiving part, because I think that's really, really important also for my listeners to get, because the universe is constantly just pouring itself out. Life is constantly pouring itself out in so many ways in every second of the day. And most of us, this is the time not to have your head down, you know, put your head up and look at all the ways that good is coming our way. And it could be, it's as simple as, you know, the bird that's on your windowsill, or the flowers that are blowing in the wind, or the feeling of the wind on your face, or an idea or inspiration. It's constantly giving to us. And it's so unfortunate that we're closed to that, and we're stuck in some sort of a smaller world, and we're not seeing all that, we're not experiencing all that, we're not taking it all in, that we get very, very discouraged and stuck in our little small world that is more in the energy of the material and, you know, whatever it is, goals or life purpose or whatever, or the plan, like you mentioned. You know, the universe doesn't unfold for us in a plan, like, here you go, step 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like, for me anyway, my experience is my next step is revealed and I take it. And then kind of the next step is revealed and I take it. And then I kind of enjoy what's there. And then until I need something else, the next step doesn't show up.
Yeah, and then it does. Yeah, exactly. That's how my life journey has been. And it's just amazing, science and spirituality, how for me, like, they are just, you know, being open and curious and wanting to have a journey of inquiry. Both these paths, spiritual and scientific paths, they are basically sourced by that same thing that we are looking for, right? And so I think, like, at the heart, at the essence, they are totally connected. And so for me, like, they're just so aligned. Like, you know, when I'm trying to study some systems and what properties emerge and what is universal, and when I'm, like, just trying to figure that out in the old world, I mean, it's just part of my journey on truth, you know, what I do for my research, physics research. But in itself, it cannot be complete. Like, I mean, how can, like, curiosity be such that, oh, I'm curious only about this particular material, but I'm not at all interested in knowing what happens inside of me? I mean, it won't be like full curiosity. I feel like, imagine, like, you know, and so I feel like it's so important to have curiosity that is not like in compartments, and it's like flows through everything, and is there are no blocks and barriers, you know. I'm as curious to know like about plants and trees, and now that's another thing. Like, I have been, like, you know, I was always very close to the earth, and I really feel this Mother Earth thing in me. But I didn't really know, because I was doing physics and I didn't really spend time learning about anything. So now I've been doing permaculture design for a while and learning about all that. So I think, like, you know, whatever you need to know at that point, you find it. Just having the openness is what we need, I think. And thinking from the perspective of abundance and not scarcity. Because as soon as you get into this city thinking, then you're doing too many calculations of, oh, but is this going to be good for me? As though, like, there's some, you can only do certain number of things, and there's only certain amount of time, and like, there's too much of, like too many constraints we put in ourselves into a very, like, you know, scarcity is basically that, like, you feel there's not enough of anything for me, for others, and that kind of puts you into a very close state, exactly opposite of being open and curious and find, like, listening. And so I think that's how I just feel like I love to live in an abundance way of thinking and being open and just going where I need to go. And I just hope that I can contribute. But by doing that, I feel like I'm so connected to the universe that there's no way, but like the only way I can think about anything is always like what is going to be good for everyone and everything. Because like you're so open and so connected. It's not like you plan, oh, I'm going to do this. That becomes your natural state. And I think that's what gives you the energy. And that becomes the source of energy. And you can do a lot of work. Even like your time doesn't feel restricted because you're just receiving so much.
Yeah, and it's just like we talk about your grandmother's being an example for you. You're living from an abundance consciousness and a consciousness of love and interconnectedness and understanding in that way. People see that and are affected by that. So I think you, and we all have this. We all have this ability to just be. For me, I would say it's like the divine living through us and as us. And as we fully express it, it's a wonderful example for other people to also say, wow, what is that? That's the kind of life I want to be living. And so I think as you're living true to yourself in that way, you inspire a lot of people. I would like to talk a little bit about physics and science and quantum physics. And I think that most people have the experience of scientists as not being spiritual or rejecting religion or being atheist and all of that. I don't know if that's your experience or not, but I know that that's kind of a stereotype, I think, of a lot of scientists, that they're very into materialism. And so what I mean by that is just the physicality of the universe and that consciousness is something that the brain creates versus that consciousness exists in itself. So I don't know if that's your experience of being amongst other physicists or not. Is it?
You know, I don't think this stereotype is right. I mean, even if we just go back to all the different scientists who were, like, you know, think about Newton, think about Galileo, or think about Einstein.
Yeah, Einstein.
I mean, come on, like, we see his quotes everywhere in every field.
Right,
like,
right.
And there were so many physicists also, like, you know, who were asking all these questions. They were curious. And I think so the stereotype is what it is. It's a stereotype. And uh-huh. I think it's more, in my opinion, I think it's the system that makes it so. So it's not so much the scientists. The system would like it to be that they are like that. And so... Mm. In fact, because, you know, even quantum physics, you said, right? So the way when quantum ideas were developed, after that, like, there were all this, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, and then, like, there was, after that, there were all these wars. And I think, like, the way quantum physics got into the education, even, it was in such a way that how can we use quantum mechanics to make something to compete with other countries? And it was much more of a, how can you utilize it? It's like, it was not so much, that's so amazing, quantum physics. Ideas are so amazing. We want people to know. It was not like that. It was like, let's train lot of people with these ideas, because you can do so many calculations and those calculations can give us so many things. It was more like, what can you get out of it kind of thing. So the way the quantum physics was taught, like, they didn't want anyone to, like, get into, like, none of the courses were, like, asking questions about, like, deep meaning of what quantum physics is. Foundations of quantum physics became a completely separate field. And, like, most students were not taught anything about it. It's like, oh, who has time to, like, sit and think about, like, you know, what quantum physics really means and, like, what are different interpretations and how that might relate to anything, right? All the mysteries of the universe. It's more like, can we make calculations? Let's learn how to use quantum mechanics to do calculations, to make bombs. And, you know, I'm just exaggerating here, but I think that was kind of the way it was introduced even. So what I'm trying to say here is that it's the systems which kind of dictate what happens with like, you know, even like a beautiful topic like quantum physics can just become like the way we want to exploit nature. It's like exploiting quantum physics too. How can you take quantum mechanics and get things out of it?
Yes, like, yes, well, I completely get this. Yeah, it's the consciousness so, which it's being looked at. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that. So I don't think it's so much like the scientists, but it's the system that wants them to be like that. They want you to be like not asking all these questions, do your research, get us results, get us funding. And yeah, so the reason I'm so free is because I'm just not really answerable right now to anyone. The way I work is like I work independently and no one is going to tell me, oh, this is how much research you should do and this is how many papers you should write and this is how much funding. But once you're part of the system, you have very little choice. And so I think some of them, I'm sure like a lot of scientists land up being not really feeling fulfilled at some point because like they have to kind of, the system is pushing them to be like this when they are actually like this big and grand and have so many things. And a lot of people who come in academia come like because they want to explore. But then, I mean, I think they do like it's, and there are some who do manage to still be like, stay like that and not get into the publish or perish kind of mentality. And so there are all sorts there. And like, I just can say that all the people I've interacted with and have been amazing. I've made so many beautiful friends who are scientists and physicists. And yeah, so I just feel like, you know, you just, a lot of times you just don't see the whole humanity of the person. And then like all these stereotypes get formed because of that. And so I feel like I just love all the physicists with whom I have collaborated. And yeah, I just hope they will. I only feel like I hope they all find time to be fully themselves.
Well, I think you raise a really, really, really good point. And that is the structures that we live in define how we're going to use something. And you could use it for beauty and for the good of all, or you could use it for some sort of selfish reason or some sort of defending your own tribe. And I think the structures that we have are outdated. And it's where like science happens where the money is. So if the somebody with money wants you to research this X or Y, then X or Y gets researched. But maybe Z over here is the most amazing thing, but nobody really wants that. So the money's exactly not there. And so people end up having to kind of sell their souls a little bit because they have families and all, you know, they're not bad people. Just trying to make a living and all. Yeah. So it's really the structures. And I really think that what's going on the planet right now, I think that right now, a lot of these structures are being revealed as being not life-giving, not life-supporting. And that we're very possibly on this planet now to change these structures, to change these foundations in another earth, another world will come forth with different, a whole different structure or no structure at all. But we're stuck, I think, in this kind of materialistic structure. And I think you make such a good point about how science could just flourish, you know, like the Renaissance and art and all of that, if it were unleashed.
Yeah. And I think like, and people will contribute much more to the society if they were like not put in those boxes.
Right.
Like all these people have amazing energy. And yeah, so actually that's something very close to my heart. And I have been like for several years developing some ideas, receiving some ideas, I should say,
yes,
you know, for entrepreneurs, and I'm developing. Hopefully one day we'll be talking again and I'll be sharing with you all the things that I have been working on, I hope.
Yes. Yeah, I love that.
I have a vision of the world where it would go and could go and how it could go there. And so, yeah.
Well, what is your, can you share what your vision of the world is?
And no, actually, I feel like, I mean, of course, the vision is where there are connections and like what we would like to see, right? Like we all probably have the vision, but I have some idea of we can, imagine how we can get there. And it's something I'm developing, and hopefully I'll have when the time comes. You know, everything has a time, like, you okay. know, so when the time comes,
I understand.
I'll finish, and I will love to talk with you again one day. But
okay.
I feel
that's fair.
Systems are really changing. I mean, as you said, like, you know, there's so much happening, and hopefully, like, yeah, we will evolve into something different. The way the systems currently are not really working the best. And I mean, the academia, I mean, it's just...
And it's everywhere. And I think that we're going through these growing pains, and, you know, there's going to be a grab to hold on to these systems, because there are many who benefit from it. And then they're going to want to keep them in place. And the rest of us don't really know how to create the new ones. But I think we're going through these, like, tectonic plates and consciousness and in our evolution. And I think we're on the planet at this time for a reason, to help birth something new. At least that's what I think too. And that's actually kind of the theme of the retreat I'm doing in October, is about the creative process and creating a world that works for all. And it's a mighty vision. But
yeah,
we could each at least put our consciousness to in alignment with that, those ideas.
We need to, as you said, like, we have to free the whole thing from all this constraining systems. And I just feel very sad though, as to, like, you know, all those stories about scientists and about, like, people in academia having so many mental health problems, and or students even. And that's, I think, I mean, you know, all this curiosity and this amazing research is somehow not giving them everything they want, because of maybe they're not able to really fully be themselves, because they're trying to be a part of this, mm-hmm. play a role in the system. And, like, you know, the systems are such that they are kind of keeping the violence going towards yourself, towards others, and somehow we need to get into more nonviolent way of being. And so nonviolent communication is also part of a big part of my practice. And that's something that, again, aligns very much with, you know, my Jain upbringing, my Vipassana meditation, my research, and my, you know, permaculture, and, like, design of how to kind of design, think from the whole system's point of view, and communicating in a way that is not violent, non-harming. So, yeah, I think, like, there are so many interesting movements currently going on, and the whole regenerative movement. So I feel like there's a lot of energy, creative energy, and lots of movements. And I somehow feel like we are going, hopefully all this will take us in the direction we all need to go as humanity, and as the whole earth and all animals. And hopefully the animals will finally, you know, be free and liberated. I think if I have, like, you know, that's my, like, you know, prayer. And, like, you know, whenever I practice metta meditation, which is like this loving kindness, at the end of Vipassana, you always practice loving kindness meditation. And it's so important to practice that, and for all beings and for yourself, and just having that permeate, this loving kindness permeate everything. And yeah, just thinking about all the animals that are currently, like, not at all free, and all those human beings that are not at all free. And I just want to, like, you know, say that I want to just, with your audience, whoever is there, whoever sees this, whoever joins us in this circle, I just want to take a moment to send out, like, a lot of loving kindness to all beings and to all animals and all of Earth and the whole universe.
That's beautiful. The animals, I have a weekly prayer call where we, on Tuesday mornings, where we do this, where we send our energy out to all the animals. And it is such a key, that a huge blind spot, that we want people to be free. We want people to be creative, and we won't have that as long as we're enslaving animals. It's it's very interconnected. There's just no way that the boundary of our interest stops at the human-animal interface that we can be. We want to have all kindness for humans, and the animals are something else. It's all interconnected. Yeah. And so, yeah, right now, animals are horribly enslaved and exploited and harmed and tortured and everything, where the food, entertainment, clothes, everything, and at our hands. And that's something that as we evolve, we really need to transform that in order. And it shouldn't be because we want to be free, but if we want to be free, we definitely need to do it. But it's just the natural thing, I think, for our humanity to be, you know, letting them all free. I know it's hard for some people to get. Some people listening may not like that, but maybe they're seeds, kind of like your uncle planted seeds, the seeds that just kind of go in their heart, and maybe they'll fertilize and come to manifestation later. But it is a really, really important message. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
It came full circle back to like what we were talking in the Jain religion, how all these things are connected. It's just interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very much so. So we've only got a couple more minutes. I just want to make sure that perhaps you've said what you want to say, but if there's anything else that you want to share with us, I want to give you that platform. I know you've got something coming up on Golden Rule Day.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
right.
You can talk a little bit about that.
Thanks for reminding me. So on April 5th, there's this Golden Rule Day that is celebrated, and Charter for Compassion has been doing this over the last several years, that they have a bunch of events on that day. And as part of this year's celebration, I'm going to be giving a talk which is going to be called Alice's Adventures in the Golden Rule Land. So Alice's Golden Rule Land. And so I just want to tell the listeners, if someone is interested in joining me on a journey of inquiry and in this, you know, wonderland of Golden Rule. And I'm laughing because, you know, when I first heard the word Golden Rule, the word Golden Rule that we all learn is, for me, is Golden Rule. And so whenever I keep hearing Golden Rule, like, why is everyone talking about the Golden Rule, which is, for me, the Golden Rule is, for me, is Golden Rule, which is about like some completely different thing. And because I didn't grow up with this word's Golden Rule. So anyway.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying.
But it is a universal law. Yeah.
Of course, I know the meaning behind it and what it means,
of course.
It's there in the culture. But anyway, so I'm going to be talking Alice's Adventures in Golden Rule Land. And the Golden Rule here is not the physics Golden Rule, but the Golden Rule, which is the, like, you know, treat others the way you would like them to treat you, or don't treat others the way you don't want them to treat. Okay. So anyway.
So how would people find that, though?
Yeah, so actually, Charter for Compassion website, maybe you can share later the link, but on Charter for Compassion website, there is under special events. And like, if you just follow Charter for Compassion on social media, they will be coming up with announcements, I think next week or so. So second week of March. And that will give the time when it's going to be on April 5th. So I hope some of you will join me.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. We'll make sure we have those links.
Yeah. And if you are like, you know, as I said, like I have lots of projects going on. And if you stay in tune, follow me on LinkedIn. That's the only social media I use. You will hopefully find out about what I'm up to.
Great. Yeah. Nayana, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your very integrated life that starts out with Jainism and has the meditation and also the physics, and it's all intertwined and it's all connected to be this amazing, we're living in an abundant universe. The importance is receiving, or we have the opportunity to receive all this, and that we are co-creators and that we can create a world that works for all beings, and that we walk lightly and love everyone and everything. and be mindful of what goes into our bodies. So I think you've really shared a lot of wisdom here, and I just really appreciate you being with me today.
Yeah, I love being with you, and I hope our conversations will continue and we'll cross paths pretty soon.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I'm sure.
Thank you.
I'm sure the universe is watching. How amazing we are together, and it will bring us together again.
I've got ideas. I've got lots of ideas already. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I now close the Spiritual Forum. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, you can let me know by leaving a positive rating and review on your favorite podcast app, or make a tax-deductible donation at thespiritualforum.org. The Spiritual Forum is a podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry affiliated with Unity Worldwide Ministries. Thank you again for being a part of the Spiritual Forum community. And remember, you are an amazing, divine, and powerful being.